ABC Radio Hobart. Ted Lefroy is Director of the Centre of Environment at the University of Tasmania and pops in every now and then with the latest in environmental science knowledge, and with some, I guess, conundrums to get your brain ticking over as well. Hello, Ted.
Morning, Rick.
You're looking today at the relationship between, well, science and us.
Yep.
It's not something you'd think would have to be thought through very much, but is it changing?
It is. And I think that the idea that there's one monolithic enterprise called science is now a myth. And something happened about the middle of last century, I think, when the unintended consequences of a lot of technology started to crop up. Rachel Carson's book, Silent Spring, about effects at a distance, pesticides. A lot of things appeared where people thought, okay, so science is not just one universally good enterprise that develops technology, which then, you know, benefits humankind. That there are unintended consequences that we need to negotiate. And one thing, this book that's coming out in a couple of weeks called Enhancing Science Impact, it makes a clear distinction between the technology-related sciences, where context doesn't matter. So the electrons will move around the circuit regardless of who presses it or where they do it or their gender or their education. You know, it's and then there is the science that helps us navigate complex issues such as climate, water, food, energy, all these sort of things. And that kind of science, where the facts are uncertain, the values are in dispute and the stakes are high, becomes political. And a lot of scientists, I think, are still naive in their thinking that, oh, science and politics don't mix. But you cannot avoid politicisation when you get to these big issues.
Well, that was like people arguing sport and politics don't mix, you know, when there's boycotts and things like that. You're like, people are involved. Hello.
Exactly.
Polis. Exactly. It's the people. So there used to be an idea, it was a bit like the markets, wasn't it? We still think this, that, you know, well, I just do my trades and it doesn't matter because it's just money.
Yeah.
And science was like that. Any discovery was legitimate.
Yeah.
It's not up to me how you use it. Is that not seen now as a legitimate way to do science?
It is if you're dealing with controlled experiments in a laboratory environment where the context is irrelevant. But as soon as it changes the way people use it, or the impact it has, and the scale at which it operates, then it's naive to think that it doesn't involve political influence, power, values. And so, if you think of an example, there have been various attempts to declare conservation areas on land and in the sea. And there's some examples in this book, Enhancing Science Impact, about trying to get marine protected areas, conservation reserves. And one model is you get some experts to say where should they be and how big should they be, and then that goes out for public comment, and then the politician makes a decision. And if that's the way it happens, almost inevitably it's going to come politicized through the public comment, that people will weigh up both sides, and you'll have this big messy dispute, and then often the politicians throw their hands in the air and say, this is all too difficult, it's not going to happen. And there was an example of where this they tried and failed to do this in Florida, and it's one of the case studies in the book, and so they let it lie for about a decade. When they came back to it the second time, what they did is go to great lengths to put together a large group, about 25 people, that represented all the diverse interests, and they found a way to incorporate local knowledge, including local indigenous knowledge and science, into a gridded map of the area so that they understood what the people who lived there, who would be most affected, that their knowledge and their values were represented. And, you know, it's an exhausting process, and it was over 12 months and lots of meetings, but they actually managed to come to some common ground. So that process of negotiation was political, but an important part of it was the quality of the science that went into it, but also acknowledging that the facts are uncertain and the values were in dispute, but they resolved those. And so when they then presented to the state government a plan, the politicians who looked at it realised it had some weight. It had negotiation. It had support from all sides. But if you throw it like a ball into a rugby scrum and say, just work it out amongst yourselves, it's almost asking for dispute. Now, a lot of scientists would think, well, that's not my business. I'm not trained in that. And I think the value of this book is to say, well, it's naive to think like that. You can't avoid it.
Ted Lefroy is director of the Centre for Environment at the University of Tasmania, and the book that's sparking this conversation this morning is Enhancing Science Impact, Bridging Research, Policy and Practice. And it's by Hobart scientist Pete Leith and friends, and is launched on October the 6th. So it's coming out really soon. And it's a local product. I mean, obviously in Tasmania, social licence has been such a big issue, hasn't it, in all of this. Is the idea that you'd work that into your scientific communication process something that might think you would encourage people to think differently about their processes?
More than communication. I think it's the way that people are being encouraged to practice. But the thing is that in most science courses, this isn't taught. And so people come into the... You know, when they've got their freshly minted license to practice science, what they don't realise is it's a very messy, complex world, and you can't just bury your head and ignore the politics. You have to understand the process of negotiation, and considering there are no settled values. You know, and that's what was termed, about the middle of last century, wicked problems. Wicked problems have no right answers because they're mixtures of fact and values. And you can't just get an expert to say, I'm a scientist, this is what I think, that should carry forward. So, you know, science is becoming a far more complex and messy process, but the encouraging thing is acknowledging the fact that there's power and politics involved.
Is it about trying to get people to be reasonable as well, so that, because if you drop news hard, people react? Whereas if you bring them along, they tend to respond, to go, well, we haven't got all the answers, but we have to chart what we feel is the better way. And that's okay.
It is. And I think it's far more democratic. It's not saying that we get an expert from out of town who's got the answer, or even from in town. It's acknowledging that people who will be affected have a right to express a view.
So why do you think we've got such a long history? I mean, I'm thinking about Okehampton Bay right now. There were people out on boats protesting about that. The government tried to deal with people's concerns, going, everything except here is protected. Why don't people just get round tables? Surely it's easier than dealing with this sort of thing.
Because the outcome is never quite known. You know, there's a saying in politics, don't hold an inquiry if you don't know the outcome before you start. And that's a very cynical view. But, you know, I heard a senior public servant in Canberra say once that every policy has its unintended consequences. Some of them also have their intended consequences. And if you take that view and you genuinely want to find an outcome that will last and have strong support, you've got to go through a fairly tortuous process of negotiation. A lot of people don't want the uncertainty of that. Or they've got a particular outcome in mind and they go through just paying lip service to a process of public comment or negotiation.
And then everyone protests anyway.
Yeah.
And then they're like, why did I bother talking to you?
So at the heart of a lot of this is trust and integrity, and it's whether, is there a hidden agenda or not?
So how would you teach science differently then, Ted? How would you, you've got a group of scientists in the room. What needs to be in that teaching that's different?
I think to knock out some of the naivety, that unless you're dealing with the directly technological related sciences, you are working in a complex environment, a social environment, and you need to understand about politics and values.
But you say there's still an idea of pure science in the laboratory, but if I'm working on this little chipboard that allows this thing to do something, but it's going to enable killer robots to take over the planet. I mean, is it still legitimate? We still have an ethical problem with that, don't we?
You do, and that's why I think this is, you've hit on one of the big issues. I managed to escape university with a science degree without having done any philosophy, either logic or ethics, and yet they both lie at the very heart of science.
Everything.
Yeah. And so I think if people are awake to the fact that about uncertainty and different kinds of argument, they're very rarely absolute proofs anywhere in science or anywhere else. Often we're dealing with strong inference, We're dealing with persuasive arguments, but not absolute proof. And, you know, the question of rights and ethics really isn't raised in most science degrees.
I think it should be fundamental. The title of the book is is Enhancing Science Impact, Bridging Research Policy and Practice, and it comes out in, 3 weeks or so?
Yep.
Thanks, Ted.
Great.
Nice to talk to you this morning.
See ya. Thanks.
This is Sasquatch.